Bill?
Ted Dreyer, Harlan Schober, welcome to KABU.
Thank you.
Yeah, good to be here.
Both Ted and Harlan have been very active in the Standing Rock struggle to stop the Great Black Snake with its many counterpart pipelines snaking across lands all over the planet and threatening to make the planet uninhabitable. Ted and Harlan, tell us how you got involved in the Standing Rock struggle and why. And then we'll talk about the possibilities of severe repression, how the Trump administration will react to Standing Rock. It's likely to be the first big challenge to right-wing power over a crucial policy in the Trump administration. And just a hint to our audience, this has been anticipated by the movements, and we'll be discussing how the Great Civil Disobedience Movement is going to operate in the future. That is some of the plans. Who wants to go first?
Harlan, why don't you start, because you really helped start the bunk bus part of this project.
Sure. Okay. In September, a friend and I, Mike Horner and I, planned to make a trip to the Standing Rock area with donated supplies for the camp. And the response was just something I've never felt before. Goods kept showing up. We were planning to each take a pickup truck and a small trailer. Shortly, we had to rent a large Penske truck, and we filled it. We took 5 wood-burning stoves. We're estimating 30 tents, 40 or 50 sleeping bags, countless tarps, clothing, food, medical supplies. And we made the drive out, unloaded the truck, spent some time at the camp, and came back. And we realized that shelter was going to be the issue in the wintertime. It was a pleasant day in September. It was breezy and warm. But we knew that as soon as the breeze was no longer warm, it was going to be a real problem. And we spent a couple of weeks here in Portland when we got back just thinking about what would work. I can't remember how it came out really, but we ended up settling on the idea that converting a school bus to warm, dry shelter would work. And when we put the word out about that, my gosh, the support really flowed in. Volunteers, cash donors. We had donation of space where we could do the work. So we completed the bunk bus one and delivered that, commissioned that at the Ochetisakuan camp. And we were on the road back to Portland from that this last Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. That's how we got started.
And, Ted, you were one of the early volunteers and got really active.
Well, actually, no, I was. I only got involved at the last minute, just before the first bunk bus went out. Yeah, I had participated in a demonstration after the Mosier derailment in the gorge, where we blocked in oil train tracks in Vancouver. And one of the people involved in that was helping with the bunk bus. And I contacted her, Bonnie McKinley, shortly before they left saying, hey, do you know anybody who's going out to Standing Rock? And she put me in touch with the bunk bus. So because the underlying issue, the problem of an economy, exploitative economy that puts the value of profits made by fossil fuels over life and water and the health of the entire planet was obviously a common theme. So after making that trip, which was so incredibly inspiring, I was completely hooked. And since then, I've done what I could to support the bunk bus.
Tell us a little bit more, Harlan, about your motives and what you think, and Ted, why it's so important to keep it in the ground, which is now part of an international movement.
Well, everyone tells us that the carbon will kill us, and if you leave it in the ground, it won't kill us, and that's the best sequestering we can do. So it's hard to even go back to having that discussion, but yes, keeping it in the ground is vitally important. The issue at Standing Rock is different than that and more than that. That involves Native sovereignty. It involves indigenous people leading that segment of the movement. And it's a perfect coming together of interests.
And it involves water as well.
It involves water, but also indigenous-led resistance to fossil fuel infrastructure has been winning. The Lummi defeated the coal terminal up in Bellingham area. It's having indigenous groups take the lead. There's something very compelling about that. So in this matter of taking a bus out there, this is strictly an in-service function. We're providing a bus. The folks on site get to use it. They get to do what they need to do with it. So we're not in any leadership capacity at all. This is a service trip.
Although the bus is, it's sort of set up to be a medical facility. It will be the medical people who begin using it. Is that right?
Yeah, there are a lot of different interests in the camp. It's a coming together of a whole bunch of different nations who hadn't been talking to each other much for a while. So they have their own differences. They have their own politics to work out, nothing I know anything about. The reason we've attached ourselves to the medical and healing council folk is that they, by all appearances, are serving everyone equally. So we're not involved with any of that. We're just providing a bus for the guys who take care of the water protectors.
The wonderful thing about this practical, functional vehicle and this project, which, as Harlan just said, is in response to a call from Standing Rock for support, is that even though it's very practical, hands-on, a matter of bolting plywood onto an old bus, installing insulation, it has functioned as a focus to move people who otherwise haven't been involved to be able in a very practical way to support the bus. And the conversations that have gone on around this very practical effort and the amount of energy it has generated have been really amazing. So that basically I think what has been amazing about the Native American opposition to this particular pipeline is the way that especially the people at Standing Rock have been able to articulate it as a symbol of a movement against not only one specific pipeline, and that's sort of the importance of the symbol of the pipeline as a black snake, meaning it's something larger. There's an entire way of living, economic system, a cultural system that is exploiting the earth in a way that is incredibly damaging to human life. And the symbol that water is life captures that in a brilliant way that has been able to attract a huge amount of attention. And what the bunk bus has done is to just offer an instrument for a lot of people here in our area to get involved in that. And I really think that this project is in many ways a kind of a model, because Harlan and Mike started out with nothing more than inspiration by Standing Rock, just with an idea. They didn't have a lot of money. And the energy flowed in, and the volunteer hours, literally thousands of volunteer hours flowed in. The time between the day they bought the bus and we left for Standing Rock was exactly 3 weeks. How can you transpose an old school bus into an outstanding medical facility in 3 weeks? I mean, it wouldn't seem possible. It's kind of a miracle, really. And that is a testimony to the power of the energies coming out of Standing Rock and the power of the human imagination to rise up and oppose this incredibly oppressive system, which constantly generates the message that there is no alternative, as Maggie Thatcher loved always to say. Resistance is futile. Look at the weapons we have. Look at the armed, militarized police we have. Forget standing up. And this, as we move into the Trump era, will be all that much more important.
Yeah, you're talking about the inspiration, the knowledge, the brother and sisterhood that gets developed. It's the spread of that spirit and the knowledge and the commitment that is ultimately, it seems to me, through the people in all sorts of actions and practice that's going to turn the tide. This is KBOO Radio, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Ted Dreyer and Harlan Schober, who have been instrumental. Harlan was one of the co-founders of the Bus Bunk Project. They're taking another bus out to for the medical people at Standing Rock. They're going to be doing that, I believe, next week. Next week is also going to be the first days of the Trump presidency. Yeah. This is going to be his first crisis, it looks like. I mean, he has already said he's going to end it quickly. I think he's a man of his word. On his whatever words that he says, as erratic and contradictory and, as you point out, barbaric as he is, I believe he's a man of that word, resonates with his character. He's going to try and end it quickly as an example, my theory of Reagan's PATCO when he destroyed the air traffic controller union as a demonstration to all corporations actually to crack down on your workers and we'll support you. That was a successful maneuver by the Reaganites. I think it's pretty clear they're going to be used repressive items. The police in North Dakota, and also now the militarization and the army possibilities and their crackdown and the charging of absurd lengthy felony sentences for civil disobedience. They will cook things up. It's all very frightening. The protectors of Standing Rock and the tribes and everybody else knows that's likely to happen. And it's been happening all over the country. The response to that kind of oppression and pressure and police state sort of tactics is to disperse things all over, make it impossible for them to deal with an entire country that is, in fact, challenging not just the fossil fuel industry, but the way the current economic system works to destroy the planet.
What you're saying, Bill, is right on, and I think they will focus on Standing Rock, and I think that is because they understand the power of this movement, and they understand how incredibly effective it has been and what a threat it poses to them, so which is a kind of a stunning backhand recognition of the, again, the power of a small disenfranchised group of people, the native people gathered at Standing Rock, to make a difference. So that is stunning. But I also want to point out at this point, the worst things that have happened there, the dogs that were set on the water protectors and the incredible evening that Harlan mentioned before at the bridge where the water protectors were sprayed with water, shot with rubber bullets, and so on, they have attracted more media attention and more sympathy for this movement than anything that has happened. And it really reminds me of the dogs set on the demonstrators of Birmingham, and many people have drawn that connection, which helped to propel the civil rights movement back then to its highest successes. So I am not, of course, looking forward to any kind of violent oppression of the Standing Rock movement. But I can say that the Native people at Standing Rock insisted that they were not that interested in the election because no matter what happens, they have already survived the worst oppressive actions that this nation has brought against any people anywhere. And just like some were saying, they wouldn't be able to stand up to the North Dakota winter. Well, they've been doing that for millennia, and they will stand up.
Harlan, you mentioned the Lummi near Billingham.
Yes.
It's happening all over the country, is my sense. There are pipelines being challenged.
I think there are encampments in Texas, in Florida, in Iowa, and elsewhere. I forget the name of the big encampment in Arizona, and I never could pronounce the name of the encampment up in Canada, in Alberta, I think it is. But the practice of putting bodies in the way of pipelines and other fossil fuel infrastructure projects has been going on for a while, and we'll try to support as much of that as we can.
We can add to that Minnesota, Florida, Hawaii, Washington, Wyoming, the inspiration emanating from Standing Rock is not something that can easily be stopped at this point.
No. And in the cities, there are coal trains that are being stopped.
The people in cities
have a huge role, in fact, in not just keeping it in the ground, but in fact building a very different economy, really reconstructing cities. I'd like to talk about that just for a second, state of hypothesis.
Before we move into that, I'd just like to bring into this business of the various encampments. We also had the valve turner folk, the five teams that turned off the flow of oil from Canada into the U.S. This dispersed all kinds of people doing all kinds of actions. It's this decentralized kind of movement that you talked about earlier that I think is our hope.
In the past decade, it has been sometimes really hard to organize opposition because the issues are also complex. If you sit down and try to explain to someone the economics of capitalism and the way that we are being oppressed and the connection between what the banks did in 2008, it's very complicated. It's difficult to understand, and it's hard to organize around complex analyses of economic systems. But the Standing Rock movement, with its simple formula, water is life, has galvanized people in a way that nothing else, because that is a straightforward, it is a simple formula, but it is not superficial. It is incredibly profound, and it expresses, and the Standing Rock movement has expressed, this combination of a movement that is spiritual without being flaky. It's profoundly economic, political. And listening when we were there to the elders speak in the so-called in the prayer ceremonies in the morning, is very clear that they understand this movement as an attempt to oppose the entire economic exploitative system. And that, I think, has really inspired people. The bunk bus is just part of that, and all of these other camps that have risen up, and the multiple protest movements that are coming about. Mm-hmm. Are, I think, responses and reflections to the power of that symbolism. I think we in the left have often been too abstract in our attempt to motivate and communicate with people. And this has really provided us with a symbol that is very potent.
I think people do catch on, actually, once they get involved. Mm-hmm. People do understand, almost everybody understands, that on a finite planet you cannot have infinite growth, that the thing has to stop, and that capitalism means growth. Yeah. I think they understand that how the system works to grow and grow and grow and ultimately destroy the planet. I think they're catching on. Part of it is just getting into practice and realizing that you can stop this machine and that there are alternatives, and people see alternatives in their neighborhood. They understand that solar power and wind power are now cheaper than the fossil fuels or nuclear. Yeah. I think people are wising up to it in lots of ways because, though, there is this resistance and great struggle and sympathy for it.
Well, I just want to say that it's really interesting that Nestle chairman Peter Brabeck just asserted that people do not have a right to water because, of course, Nestle would like to corner the water market and transform water into just one more commodity that you can use to squeeze money out of people, just at the time when the people at Standing Rock are emphasizing that water is life, meaning that human beings, it's not so much we have a right to this particular chemical called water, but we have a right to live, and that we have to stand up for that value, that very fundamental value with all its physical, economic, and spiritual implications. And I'm very grateful to that movement that they have given us a rallying point.
I want to thank you, Harlan Schober and Ted Dreyer, for your work. Drive safely out to North Dakota.
All right, we'll try.
And it's both heroic and inspiring, and more than that. And give our regards in Portland to the people resisting and pushing forward in Standing Rock and other places.
Thanks
to you,
Bill.
So thanks a lot for talking to us.
Thanks
today.
To the old mole and to Kibu.